Thank you for allowing me to be here today. Thank you so much. You have a very beautiful church, and I wish that we could be able to do a church without having crime scene tape all over the place. And I say that because part of my introduction is that I worked for 27 years at the State Law Enforcement Division, commonly known as SLED. I'm a forensic chemist by trade. I'm the guy who goes out, collects the evidence at the crime scene, goes into the laboratory, analyzes it, and go to court and testifies about it. Many of the people who are in jail today I know personally. That's not necessarily a good thing, but I do know them personally. I had this county, Aiken was actually one of the counties I had for over 12 years, where I sat down here and was involved with just about every crime that you had where they were called SLED in, I was involved in it. So I know this county fairly well. One of the things you need to know about me is this. My beginnings were somewhat humble. I'm from a little town called So-So. That is S-O-S-O, okay? You'll find it. It's right beside hot coffee on one side and get to know on the other. Unfortunately, or fortunately, it's not in this state. It's the little state of Mississippi. It's down in the southern part of it. Being raised up in Mississippi was different. It's the mentality that's there that is different than here. There's a lot of anger, a lot of bigotry, a lot of things which are not right. I will tell you that I grew up in that environment and in that society. I will also tell you that it wasn't easy. You see, when I was young, only 4 years of age, my mother left. She left home. She just went away. And then we were cast upon my grandmother. My grandmother sat down here and really resented the idea that she had to raise three more children. Now, I get that because I'm now old enough now I understand. When my grandkids come over, I love them to death, and then I send them away. I love that too, okay? My grandmother didn't have that opportunity. We were there all 24/7. My grandmother's philosophy was, you're in the house, you're in the way. She would grab something and she would motivate us to go out, to go do something. As I got older, I had to work the farm. We had almost 300 acres and it was a cattle farm, and we had to work the cattle. We had to sit down here and my father would bring in all kind of weird things like pigs from Arkansas Razorback hogs, which are some of the ugliest things you've ever seen in your entire life. He would bring in turkeys, stupid turkeys. I remember because at nighttime I had to go out and we had this old Tom, and he was a big old fat turkey. He didn't do anything but kind of walk around a little bit. But he wouldn't get up on his perch. You had to pick him up to put him on his perch. Our stupid turkey just wouldn't figure it out. You know, pick me up. He'd look at you. Pick me up. I worked there, and I said, I am going to get out of this. Somehow or another, I'm leaving all this mess. So I went to school. I got my degree in chemistry. And I had aspirations of becoming a PhD in chemistry, to being able to achieve that. I was given a job offer here at the University of in Columbia, and I took it. I came up here to work on my PhD. But God had a plan for me, and it did not involve getting a degree. Why? The philosophies of this world are all intermingled within science. If you are a scientist, as several of you are in here, you know what I'm talking about. The belief in God is non-existent. The belief in that everything happens because it just happens by chance is everywhere. And it was going to destroy me because I did not have a very strong religious background. Oh yes, I went to church. Every Sunday I was at church. But unfortunately, there was no substance in the church. There was no word. It was strictly a sermon dealing with either A, if you go to hell, you're going to burn. Or it was a sermon about some other aspect, but it was never about the Word of God. Matter of fact, it wasn't ever really opened up. So when I got here and I was working on my PhD, I happened to meet a fellow who was one of the weird people called Seventh-day Adventist. And we began to have discussions. I love to get into great discussions about various things. And he had a lot of answers. And so, and lo and behold, I became a Seventh-day Adventist. I'm going to tell you something about this church. It is wonderful. Coming from the outside to come into this church, if you have not done that, you will not realize just how good you've got it. You've got a church that opens up the Word, and it will sit down here and it will explore Now, we don't know everything. We're still learning. We're still finding. Because I watch people as all the years I've been in this church, and sure enough, there are things that we thought we knew, and then it got changed. It was, oh, whoa, wait a minute. We are a church of ideas. We are a church that is in a process of trying to help everyone around us because we see everyone as our brother and our sister. And we need to embrace that and say, oh, this is great. But there's also a bad side. We got some real turkeys in our church too, okay? Y'all may not know that. This church may have never experienced any of that. But I will tell you, in my experience, I've run into turkeys in this church. I worked with Ron Halverson for a little while, and he called them pious piranhas. I like that. That's a great name. In this process with this church, this church had an interesting thing. It says, you should forgive your enemies. Well, I said, what do you mean I must forgive my enemies? I just got to sit down and just say, okay, it's all over with. I don't worry about it. I have a problem with that. It doesn't work for me. I tried. I'd go to church, they'd tell me, love my enemies. Okay, I'm going to love them. And I would tense up, and I'm going to love them, and I'm not going to have bad thoughts. And then all of a sudden, a bad thought would bubble up. And it would get stronger. And I don't know if y'all ever had bad thoughts or not. I envision a vehicle going down the road. You're crossing the road. I forget to hit the brake. Hey, it took care of the problem, okay? This is the bad thoughts I had. Our church, unfortunately, failed in one thing. It didn't tell me how to forgive people. It said, you should forgive, but how do you do that? That is what I want to explore this morning. I call it the gift of God. It's something that I learned over time, how to forgive. And I hope as I'm talking about this and relaying some of the stories that happened to me, you will go, oh, okay, there's something in here for me. But I insist that you check it out first. I don't believe in coercing. I don't believe in forcing. I believe you present information and you see if you believe it's true. Test all things. Hold fast to that what is true. And I believe that. I really do. So let's go. John 3:16. We all knew it because we was able to actually speak it without even looking in our Bibles. But turn there for a second, if you will. John 3:16. What I want to do is I want to get an idea of how God forgives. In John 3:16, at the very beginning, and please forgive me, I do not do a monologue. I ask questions. I'm asking questions to help you be able to focus in on what I'm talking about. If I'm speaking Southern, I do apologize for those from the Northeast. I will say oil. It's actually pronounced oil. I know that. I have to work on things like that. It's just my Southern upbringing, okay? I have all these little Southern euphemisms that I use. It's just part of me. So please forgive me for that. For God. Now, when the Bible says for God, most of the time it's either talking about the Godhead, it's talking about Jesus, it could be talking about the Father. In this case, who is it talking about when it says for God? The Father. Does everyone see that and understand that? It doesn't say that explicitly, but it is there. For God so loved who? Who's the world? Okay, now, when you say us, that could be true, it could not be true. Are you saying us like what I was taught when I was going to Old Antioch Baptist Church, which us was only the people in that church? That was the only group of people, according to the theology, that was going to be saved. Ah, I like that word. Everyone. How many of the people is that? Everyone. All of them. Okay. Everyone. How do you describe everyone as more than just, anyway. Everyone on this earth, it says, is loved by the Father. Isn't that great? That is wonderful. How did he do that? You got to speak up. These masks are going to kill us here. What? Okay, now be careful. You're right. You're absolutely correct. It does say that in the verse. But God the Father loved the world so much. Now that suggests that it was his action that was part of this salvation that we have, which I do believe. See, I believe the Godhead came together and devised this entire plan of salvation that we had. When did they come and do this, by the way? Well, had we already been created or before we were created? Before we were, exactly, before the foundation of this earth, this was already set up and ready to go. For God the Father so loved the world. Why would he have to love us? He did create us. But what was so special about us that the Bible's pointing us out?
We're
made in his image. We absolutely are. But what was it that we did that caused this verse to be created? Huh?
We departed from whatever. We sinned.
Exactly. He loved us so much because he saw that because of choices that could, and by the way, I'm going to hit you with this idea. Are we predestined to do bad? Were we predestined to do bad?
No.
We have a choice in everything that happens. God knows all those choices. But we can choose every which choice we want to have. Wrap your mind around that one if you really want to have something to think about on Sabbath afternoon. God has sat down and said, if you sin, I have a plan. Because it was our choice. He had a plan to cover us. Did he have to forgive us first before he said, I love you and I'm going to put the plan forth? Think about it for a second. If God did not forgive us, or whatever word you want to put in there, would that not have caused him to resist the idea of offering salvation? But he loved us so much that when he saw that we sinned, he says, I will find a way to cover you, to forgive you, to get you back. Did that not what he did? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, who is?
Jesus.
So that we could do what? All be saved? It got quiet all of a sudden, huh? Whoever believeth upon him. So God sat down here, he saw in the future, he said, I'm going to love these people even though they disrespect me. I, if you will allow me to say this, he forgave and he set the plan forward to be able to allow us to be saved if we so choose. That's what that verse is saying. Now let me apply it, if you will, to what I've learned in life. I mentioned my mother and my grandmother. As a four-year-old, I did not understand why my mother left. Rarely do children ever understand why the adults separate. I mean, we just don't. Inside of me became an angry young man. I was angry because I didn't understand. And then when I got out to other people, they had moms. I didn't. And I became so infuriated with that, but I internalized it. I did not vocalize it. Oh, I tried a couple times. I remember one time my grandfather, I was riding with him to work on, take care of some cows, had to drop off some hay. And I just had one of those moments where I got so angry that I burst out and I said, just screamed at him about how bad things were and how wrong it was. He promptly slapped me across the face. That ended that conversation. It's amazing what a slap will do. It does end the conversation, okay? It's not right, but it ended that conversation. So as I grew up, I did not have anything to deal with that anger. So anger stayed inside of me. My grandmother hated what had happened to her. She would call my mother names. I can't tell you what they are in church. Let me just put it this way. My knowledge of cuss words came from my grandmother. Now, she was a Sunday school teacher, okay? But that's okay. The Baptist church, that's all right. Because the Baptist church believes that once you have been saved, you're okay. Your reaction, what you do, has nothing to do with your salvation. I know better now. But I'm just telling you that was the philosophy she had. Oh, she would curse my mother for everything she could. And don't even think about bringing her name up. Because we all knew as children, that's something you just don't do. There was also my sister and my brother. I'm the oldest. So just kind of give you the group of kids we're talking about. Throughout my teenage years, I was looking forward to getting out of this mess. And I did. But still inside there was this anger. I was not a man of God. I was more of a man of Satan than anything else. I found a beautiful woman. She's my wife. In June, we will be married 43 years. Oh, amen on that. She's still gorgeous. Even though time, unfortunately, hasn't been kind to either one of us, but well, she's still gorgeous. I still remember how I saw her. She was in the 10th grade of high school, Mr. Bush's class. And she walked in the cutest little miniskirt I've ever seen in my entire life. She'll kill me she knows I said this, but oh, she was adorable. And none of the girls wanted to talk to me. I'm some old, farmer, and they didn't want to have anything to do with me. But she came up and she actually talked to me. Oh, that set the heart a pattering. Oh. And as they say, the rest is history. We got married, and unfortunately, the anger I was talking about, guess what it began to manifest itself in? The way I dealt with my wife. Now, I tell you this, men, because if you have anger issues, you're going to manifest it in certain ways. And you can sit down and say, oh, that's just the way I am. That's the way you choose to be. That's not the way you are. You could choose to be different. Just saying that. And ladies, if you do have a spouse that is verbally abusive, you don't have to put up with it. And my wife didn't, by the way. She pretty much, well, I won't say what she said, but let's just say that y'all know the name Lorena Bobbitt, perchance? Y'all don't know Lorena Bobbitt? Okay, let me explain. Okay, how am I going to explain this? All right, Lorena Bobbitt was married to Mr. Bobbitt. Mr. Bobbitt had sat down here and had an affair. He came home and he was going to be very secretive about it. He went to sleep. Lorena went and got a carving knife and then changed Mr. Bobbitt into where he could not have an affair anymore. Okay, does that help any? Does that ring a bell? Okay. My wife was not going to put up with it. And I thank her for that because that was wise of her. And we had children. And guess what children do when you have anger issues? Any of y'all had to deal with children? Children make you so calm and you never have any stresses. And you never have any problems from them, right? Oh, I wish I could say that. I really wish I could say that. Unfortunately, my children did just the opposite. And I'm thankful that God gave me children because it helped me begin to see some issues and see what's going on. But the man who helped me the most, believe it or not, was the man that we had arrested for murder. What had happened was is that he had bludgeoned his wife to death, and we had sat down here, brought him in. He'd also sat down here and tried to shoot at the police officers when the arrests were being made. It's a lot of other charges going on here. Because of what had happened, he was looking at the death penalty. I was sitting down collecting evidence from him, gunshot residue, trying to prove whether he'd fired a weapon or what was going on with him. And he began to talk, which many of the people that I have met who have committed crimes, they tend to do. He started talking about anger. He says, oh, it's just not fair. I had a bad home, and I had this happen. And as he began to relate these things, I'm going, wait a minute. That happened to me. A light bulb began to shine in my head. Wait a minute. He's saying my life. What is this? What's going on? That is when I began to understand. It began to open up to me. I am just like him. Now, I'm going to say something that's going to make you a little queasy. I offer to you that every one of us are just alike. I use this example. Think of your life as a box of soil, and it is seed that are planted. All those seeds of evil, and they're seeds of good. And depending upon the watering and the conditions, will sprout any of those seeds depending upon what the conditions are. Do you think that you could sit down here and be a killer? Do you think that you could kill someone? I'm asking a direct question. No? All right, if I may, I'm going to ask a few questions if I can, okay? I'm not meaning to pick on you. You're driving down the road. Someone cuts in front of you to where you almost get driven into the ditch. Do you think warm and fuzzy thoughts? Or do you sit down and say, oh, you do? What would you do? It's quiet.
They couldn't
They almost hit you. Okay, yeah. In other words, would thoughts come in your mind about, oh, if I had a gun, I'd shoot them?
No.
Okay, how about run them over?
No.
Okay, all right. And that's fair. Maybe that's something that for you, that seed has never even thought about sprouting and it's not a problem.
I've never thought about that. I wouldn't do it now.
Ah, okay. What I'm getting at is that, but by the grace of God, every one of us would be just like the people that I'm involved in arresting. Oh, I had the hardest time when I was dealing with child molesters. I would sit down here and I'd arrest these people. They had hurt these children to extents that I will not describe in here. And I was so incensed and so angered by this. I can remember just thinking, okay, I'm wearing a sidearm and I would be doing society a favor. Until the day, in talking with a person who had been this way, I realized, but by the grace of God, I would be the same way. That will get your attention real quickly when you realize that the anger that you have towards other people is because your indicator points to their sins because you have the same tendencies. Are you willing to believe that? You are an indicator of what other people are. What is it that you hate about people? Think about it. What do you hate about people? Are you guilty of the same? Are you tempted by the same? You got to be honest with yourself. This is church, okay? You can't hide. I'm not asking you to confess. The man's watching, okay? God is watching us. And we have to be able to understand that in us is all the evil. It doesn't have to grow. You don't have to give into it. But you have to recognize it. And I will give you one sad fact. On this side of the resurrection, you're going to have to realize it's there. There's a gentleman in California. He is an elder of the Adventist Church. Come to find out he had a problem. He was also a serial killer. He had killed over 12 people. But he was still a good head elder. Good head elder. Okay. You see how we do this hypocrisy? We can kind of hide and do it. This is the way we are. All right, I'll hit you one I know we all struggle with. Language. Language. Now, I told you my grandmother taught me all of my curse words. One of the biggest struggles that I have dealt with in life is to sit down, not even vocalize in my mind. But when certain people do certain things, it is a temptation. Because I'll be honest with you, there's sometimes when the good cursing just kind of fits. It just does. But God says no. We are to be people of His language. And His language doesn't have that. So I struggle with those things, as I know that each one of you do too. Because we are brothers and sisters. I don't have any secret, but I have not had any secret tapings of your home. I just know that we're all created the same way. Our likes and dislikes may be varied, but the truth is, all the good and all the evil is all in there. And we can do either one. I'll give you one other hard subject to think about too. When can you sit down here and let your guard down with people on this earth? When will they never betray you? When will they never stab you in the back? When will never be a possibility? Huh? Oh, now to be careful there. Don't say never. That's not correct. When we're in heaven, do you think you got to worry about that?
No.
Ah, so there is a cutoff point. When Christ comes back, He gives us our new bodies. You may then relax and know, I don't have to worry about that happening. But unfortunately, until that time comes, you can have someone who's been your friend for years, they can still stab you in the back. Which now turns into a question. How do you forgive them? How do you forgive that? The normal tendency of this earth is to either A, to internalize it. You know, I don't know if you understand what I mean, but just kind of, I'm going to sit down here, not hate them. until you see them, and then all of a sudden your insides begin to boil, and you know what I'm talking about. Or you sit down here and you just say, "Well, I forgive you," and just kind of go on. There's many different things you can do. But the truth is this: you cannot truly forgive someone until first, A, you see them as you are. Your enemies, you must look into their heart and say, "Well, I can't see your heart, but I know my heart. I know what I do. And if I would do that, that's how what you're doing." Now what happens is that anger begins to go away. And now you're beginning to see how to deal with them. Not all people who are forgiven should you just sit down and pretend like nothing happened. I'm going to caution you on that. There are people who hurt, and you need to make sure that you forgive them, but then you get them out of your lives. Because they are not good for you. I know you say, "Wait a minute, God wants us to take everybody and wrap our arms around them." Ooh, if I brought a moccasin, y'all know what a moccasin is, don't you? Cottonmouth moccasin. If you don't, we can bring one in. They got attitude, okay? Anybody in here like snakes? Anybody have snakes as pets? Nobody? Oh, one church I had, a young lady had a great big boa. I mean, this thing was huge. And she was proud when I talked about this. If you sat down here and I let a snake out, you may forgive the snake for being a snake and run the snake out, but you don't embrace it. There are people who are out to hurt you, and you look at their heart and you say, no, you're not in for good, and I can't help you, and I must separate from you. You say, "Well, that's not godly." When the Pharisees in Jerusalem was giving Christ such a hard time about John, what did Jesus do? Did he confront them, or did he leave to go to Nazareth? Did he go to Galilee? What did Jesus do? He left. Jesus, when the controversy was going, was not going to involve himself in a controversy, and he left. Why? Because it was not the good to stay there and have a fight. Have you ever had a fight with somebody? What'd you accomplish? Nothing. Nothing. I got to quit grabbing it, so I'm shaking this. Huh? Fighting does no good. Oh, we like to fight. We do. I mean, we all like to fight, right? But it doesn't do any good. So we've got to clear the emotions away so that we can now seek wisdom from God on how best to deal with the thing we're forgiving. That's what I'm driving at this morning, is that forgiveness requires us to be clear-minded. When you're angry with somebody and you haven't forgiven them, are you clear-minded? No, you're not. The emotions get in your head, and you're thinking thoughts that are not good. Like, why did they do this? And you get caught up in the emotions of what's going on. Well, sometimes people do things because they don't know they're doing them. Sometimes they do them because they do know they're doing them, and sometimes they're just wicked. And that's just the way it is. On this side of the resurrection, that's what we deal with. We have people who are coming into knowledge of God. We have those on the outside. We're constantly wanting those outside to come in, but they're on the outside. We must understand what drives them and what motivates them. And wait until it is time. Didn't you say you was growing persimmons? A persimmon, when you first bite into it in the fall, before a frost comes, how does it taste? Okay. None of the specialists. Let's talk about the normal garden variety persimmons we have around here in South Carolina. Is it a good taste or a bitter, very sour? It's not a pleasant taste, not to me. Yes, sir?
I just had a friend that gave me four persimmons, and when you slice it up,
Mm-hmm. And that's because we've got a first little cold or something, and that helps bring the sugars out. But until those sugars come out, ooh, only a possum can like those things. And possums do like those things, by the way. I will tell you right now, as soon as they get to where they're starting to ripe, you have more possums you know what to do with. I have to share this story about possums, I'm sorry. My wife and I were sitting down, we were watching TV, this was last year, and all of a sudden a little baby possum walks up into the living room. My wife, what? And she's just pointing at him, going, that's a possum. She says, get him out. I'm going, oh, what's that? Little possum sizes us, he just, and he turns around and walks back. Well, I have a live trap, and so I had sat down here, and I got some food that I knew they would like, and I put it into the live trap, and I set it, and I went back, sit down, and you hear a little click, and that's the sound it makes when a little door shuts. Okay, I got him. So I went and got him. It's the cutest little possum you've ever seen in your entire life. They are cute when they're little. They really are. Ugly is all is sin when they get older, but they're beautiful when they're little. I said, all right, little fella, you're old enough. I'm going to take you out somewhere else and give you a new home. So I took him out about 3 miles away and dropped him off, came back. Jody said, do you know you got them all? Well, I don't know. She said, well, could you check? I said, all right. So I reset the trap. We set back down. Click. Oh, we had two. I'll go back and look. Sure enough, his brother was there. So I took his brother to the same spot so they could enjoy themselves. Come back, reset the trap. Click. What is this? I have two now. Okay, that's four. I take those there. Go all through the night. It was 9 possums in my home. What had happened? I did not know this, but mama possums will carry baby possums until she gets kind of tired of carrying the burden. We have a fig tree, and I had gotten all the figs I had needed, so some of the figs had fallen down, and she had found the fig tree and was enjoying all the nice ripe figs at the bottom. All her little ones had gotten off her back, and she saw, oh, great, this is a good time, and she vamooshed, she left. This is actually how the mama possums sit down here and wean the baby possums, as they leave out. Well, the baby possums, not knowing what to do, realize, mama's not here, I guess my cat scared them or something, and so all 9 of them went under my house, found a drain pipe with a little opening, and they all crawled up in there, and we had 9 possums in the house. Pretty, but my wife, she lost her hair beginning to fall out after that, I think. If y'all want some possums, by the way, I got some. I can bring them to you. I know where a lot of them are at. Just a little side story, sorry. Forgiving. To sit down here and to forgive is the greatest honor that can happen. It's a gift of God. If you have forgiven someone, and by the way, forgiving has nothing to do with the other person. It doesn't. All forgiving has to do with is you. It has nothing to do with the other person. Forgiving comes about when, A, you understand. I mentioned my mother and my grandmother. Now, let me give you the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. Y'all probably don't even know who Paul Harvey is because, oh, you do? You're too young to know who Paul Harvey is. What are you talking about? Man, you have no gray. I don't have hair. I know. I'm like, okay. But my mother had something that nobody understood back in the early 60s. She had a mental illness. She was a manic depressive. No one had diagnosed it, so she was continually going manic and depressive. When you are a manic depressive, you make bad decisions because the way your brain is processing information. She made bad decisions. She made very bad decisions. But now as an adult, I can see that and say, I understand what happened. I don't think it was still right, but I now understand. And so now guess what happens? I can forgive her. I am proud to say that I reached out to my mother and we tried to develop some relationship. Again, she was still manic depressive. They finally started putting her on medicine. She hated the medicine because it tends to level out your excitement and your depression. And ultimately, she called me up one day. She said, I'm going to get off of medicine. Don't do it. Do not do it. If you do it, you're going to sit down and make some bad decisions. She did. And unfortunately, she took her life. But up until that point, I had a chance to know her, what she would allow me to know. My grandmother, when I sat down here one day, I was actually at a cemetery looking at the family plot. And there was the patriarch of the family, George Powell. He was my great-great-grandfather. And he was, and they got everybody in the cemetery. And as I was looking, I noticed and I saw four little graves with no mark, with no names on, just little markers. And then I realized there was my grandmother's children. She had had trouble with bearing children. All of them indicated within a day or two of birth. Unfortunately, she had no one to talk to. My grandfather was a German mindset, which is, okay, you eat, you work, you sleep, you have children when it's right time, but that's it. When they were having their 50th wedding anniversary, we literally had to push them together. That's just the way it was. I mean, they didn't necessarily like each other, but they were, divorce was out of the question. So he never gave her any comfort. Matter of fact, I'm sure of what he would say to her is, well, that's okay, we can have more kids. I believe what happened was my grandmother had lost so many children, and it hurt, and no one was there to talk to her about it. No one was there to comfort her, and that internal pain was there. And then three little babies are cast upon her as she was in her upper 60s. If you know what I mean by the aggravation of children, you'll understand how it compounded what was going on and the unfairness of what happened with, of course, my mother doing this. But I can understand now why my grandmother was so angry. I can understand where the hurt was coming from. See, what I'm telling you is in my own life, I've been able to show that once you understand, it helps come, the forgiveness comes forward. The forgiveness itself doesn't happen instantaneously. It's not an instantaneous, it's a process. Some things I forgive very quickly. When someone cuts in front of me, I flip my blue light on, turn it back off, I feel much better, okay? I don't know about them, they kind of drive real funny, but I feel real much better. When other people hurt me, sometimes it takes time. In my church, I've been hurt by several of my pious piranha friends, and it has been something that takes time to get through. But I do, because as I begin to look into their hearts and understand what's going on, I'm now looking like God looked upon us, and he said, he loved us so much that he offered his son that we might be saved. All we have to do is follow the pattern that God gave us to use that to deal with these issues that we have. In the Adventist church, they never told me how to deal with, you know, you have to forgive. You do know it in the Bible, it does say that we are to forgive. Freely you receive, freely you give. You know, if you don't forgive someone, then what happens to your forgiveness? Sorry? Say it again. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's found in the last part of the Lord's Prayer. We have to sit down and recognize that forgiveness, God's saying to you, is I want you to use this gift. This gift I give you to forgive your enemies. That is something that is wonderful. Something great to practice and to do. Again, I tell you, it is not something that there are some enemies I've had that I've had to, it takes time for me to sit down here and understand what's going on. It bothers me when I go into a crime scene and I see a baby who has been killed. It bothers me. I don't like that. It bothers me when I see the person who perpetrated it act as if, oh, it's no big deal. And I will tell you, it is tough. It is very, very difficult to forgive somebody who does a heinous crime. It is. Because sometimes there is no answer. Yes, you got your finger?
If somebody breaks into your house, you go up behind him and hit him over the head with a 2x4 and kill him. That's called tough love.
Well, I've heard that. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And your point is well taken in the sense of this. When Jesus comes back, you either go up or you die. I'm going to tell you, that's how God is. God has both mercy and justice. And these two have to be balanced out. They literally have to kiss somewhere so that it fits perfectly. And that is what we as Christians are striving for. I want to encourage each one of you, as Seventh-day Adventist, you're going to meet up with Pius Piranha. I don't know if you have yet, but I'm sure you may. You will meet up with arrogant people who think they know what they do and they'll hurt you. You'll meet up with all kind of evil. Return good for the evil. It will work in the end. It is our job. It is our pleasure. It is a gift that God has given us. Again, I want to thank you for letting me be here. I do ask that you think about what I've said. Look in your lives. Look at what God has done. And ask yourself a question. Is what he asked me to do worth it? Now, you don't do it in your own strength. You do it through his strength. But we can forgive everyone if we're willing to let God work through us. I ask you to think upon these things. I have a closing prayer. Most precious Heavenly Father, each one of us, dear God, come to the throne to ask for forgiveness. None of us are righteous. Our righteousness is strictly because you have covered us, you've given it to us. And in our life, as we walk, as we learn better and better how to be able to follow you, it's still sometimes we fall. Oh, dear Lord, let us give to others what you have given to us. Let our actions to others reflect what you've done with us. Let there be no shadow of difference between us and you. We're your children, and I ask, dear God, that we will reflect you in all things. I thank you for this Sabbath, and as we go forward, let us be able to enjoy the beauty of the rest that you provided. In the name of Jesus, amen.